Welcome to the Unexamined Education. This is Sean, and I'm here with a guest today, Sam. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
Sam is joining us and is going to discuss his experience about teaching this year. Sam, what grade and subjects are you teaching?
I am teaching sixth grade social studies.
Okay. And Sam also has a unique perspective being in Texas here. Sam also took on the role of coach, which I'm sure we'll get plenty of details about. Any teacher who's been a coach in Texas probably already knows some of the things that Sam might be bringing up. So, Sam, what made you want to go into teaching?
It was always in the back of my mind. I remember in elementary school, I was thinking about it a lot, how awesome it would be to have my own classroom. But then I was kind of deterred away from it, and I was thinking of other possibilities as I got to high school. I thought maybe it wasn't, I thought teaching, you know, it wasn't the best profession because everybody around me was telling me that you need to do something that will bring you a lot of money. I guess that there was an emphasis on money and how that was the most important thing.
Right, yeah.
So I started looking at a bunch of other options and I just wasn't really interested. I ended up going to college for film and TV, which I am still interested in. But I quickly learned that it wasn't for me. Like, you have to be a very social person, and you have to be social for teaching, but I feel like it's a little bit different when you're social with students and children than you are with adults.
Right.
It's a lot easier to me with kids.
Yeah.
So film was not it. So then I'm like, well, I still like the idea of teaching. And I keep thinking about, as a student, my experiences. If I'm honest, teachers like you and Miss Smith and Miss Modulik were really inspiring. And I wanted to provide that type of education that I got to a bunch of other kids. And that I feel like that kind of drove me into teaching. So my last semester of college, I started an alt cert program, and yeah, I guess that's how it happened. But it's fun. It's challenging. It's not what anybody told me it would be like.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And I mean, good time to point out that you were a student at Westwood where I teach, and
yes.
And it's interesting to know that you got all that advice that makes sense about making money, and then you say that you had a few teachers that drove you into teaching. Is this what you just said? So.
Yes. Well, not in the sense that you guys were telling me to go teach.
Right. It's no, I know. I know.
What yeah.
But it rekindled, I guess, that elementary school idea,
right?
Of like, yeah. No, I mean, that's nice. It's really nice for you to say that. But yeah, it's definitely not where the money is.
Yes.
And what years was this for you for teaching?
That's my first year.
Your first year teaching. And so the alternative certification program that you went through, were you in the classroom at all to prepare?
For 2 days. There was no student teaching. No student teaching at all. They just had me observe somebody. And my certification is social studies 4A.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure anybody who sees that is like, oh, I don't think that's like elementary. I think they got that from middle school, because I don't know how someone could just teach social studies for fourth or fifth grade.
Right.
But they threw me in the fifth grade classroom. And I just had to watch for 2 days and take notes. So that's all I really had coming into teaching.
Were those 2 days informative?
No. Not at all. Because I observed at Frisco ISD.
Yeah.
So it was, if I stayed in the district, I guess it would have helped a little. Definitely not as much as a student teaching.
Right.
But I work at Denton ISD, and I work in the 380 corridor. And
okay.
That area it's a lot different than Frisco. There's a lot of, just the whole environment in terms of finances and everything is so different, and that definitely affects kids in the classroom. So the kids that I was observing at Frisco ISD were completely different than the kids that I have to teach every day.
Right. Yeah. Socioeconomic situation.
Right,
Yeah.
correct.
Yeah. I got you. Yeah. So you jump in there day one, like, what size classes are you dealing with? What sort of, what's going through your head? Do you have any memories of that, or is it just fever dream at this point?
It feels like a fever dream every day, but I so there's 8 periods in the day, and I teach for four, and then for two of them I am coaching, and then the other two I have off, or we use for team meetings or planning or whatever we need them for. But yeah, my first period I coach during football and basketball season. We had early morning practices, and that would just bleed into first period.
Yeah.
But now we're done with that. We just have track, and that's in the afternoon. So I get to come in a lot later than I normally would and sleep
Oh,
in.
okay. That's nice.
Yes, it is. It feels so great. Yes. And then I have my second period is off, and I usually use that to get ready for the day and get all the stuff that I need for the lesson or activity or whatever. And yeah, my first class is third period. It is my biggest class. I have 30 kids in there. At one point, I had 31 students in there, but I only have 30 desks.
Right.
And I didn't realize that that was something that literally can't happen until a while later. So I emailed our counselors about it. I'm like, hey, I have more kids than desks, and they did change someone's schedule, so that helped out. And then I have
That one student helped out moving one student.
So I also have fourth period off, and then fourth period goes into lunch. So I have a really, or I mean, after third period, it's lunch, and then it's fourth period. So I have a really long extended period to do whatever, eat, have a break. And then fifth, sixth, and seventh, I have back-to-back classes. My fifth period is my smallest. I think I have 22 kids in there.
Yeah.
Then sixth is 24 kids, and then seventh, which is the one that drives me insane every day, that I have 29 in there.
Okay.
And then eighth period is athletics.
Right, so
So
the seventh period class is the one that has sort of the I assume you're referring to some sort of more raucous mode of interaction. Is that
yes, my seventh period class, their behavior is untamable. I don't,
Yeah.
that's the one that I struggle with the most, because every single day, it's difficult to get them under control. And it doesn't help that there are, I would say, about seven of them who are best friends, and they think they run the school.
Right.
And them together is just a horrible mix. And my classroom isn't that big, so separating the desks and having a seating chart doesn't really help, because I always have to end up putting someone next or close to someone else.
Close enough.
Yes, that it just disrupts everything. So it's tough.
Yeah, is this school is sixth grade the like top grade at this school?
No, it's the lowest. It's
Oh, it's the
just sixth,
lowest
seventh,
grade.
and eighth. Yes.
So they got big heads about themselves, huh?
Yes. One of them is like 6 foot 3 too. It's like, this is not a sixth grader. That is not a sixth grader.
Yeah, it can be tough. I've definitely run into that in my public school days where I'm trying to discipline someone who could, probably destroy me
Right.
if they wanted.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting challenge. I feel like so did you get an extra off period once football and basketball ended? Or I mean, and
No.
should we not say that out loud in case Denton ISD is listening?
No, I think it's fine. I mean, everybody at work calls it their off period.
Right.
But
But
no, I did not. First period, we still have those kids, like the kids who are done playing football and basketball, they still have, that's still on their schedule. So we just usually do some type of workout with them. We have a weight room that they sometimes go into. We could take them out to the field when the weather's nice and they run, or
I gotcha.
Do whatever.
It's just not, it's the stakes aren't there.
Yes, there's no there's no practice, there's no nothing. They're just working out.
It's okay, so like that's interesting. So how are those kids during that period?
I would say the athletes are much better behaved than students in the classroom, because I feel like they have more at stake, knowing that if they do act up, then they're not playing. They can be kicked out of athletics.
Right.
So, yeah, they would talk and you know, cause a ruckus a little bit, but you know, you would just blow your whistle. Done. They'd be standing at attention.
Right. But what about now when their athletics is over?
It still is the same.
The same, yeah.
Because we split it up. The morning, the first period is just seventh grade, and then the eighth period, the last period of the day, is just eighth grade.
Right. Okay.
So we still have track going on, and that's just an afternoon practice.
Right.
So a lot of the seventh graders are still in track, so they know not to really do anything stupid in the morning.
So there's still something hanging over them.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course there's the idea of playing next year, and then for the eighth graders, they want to play in high school, and they know that we communicate a lot with the high school coaches. So
I guess in my mind, I was kind of thinking of like, you know, they also probably more want to do the physical stuff than they want to do the intellectual stuff a lot of times at that age.
Yes, and it's definitely like a reward for them, because another thing that we do is grades. We have grade checks every 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And if they're failing a class, then they're out. They can't play.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of stake.
Yeah. So when you have an athlete in your room, they tend to behave.
Yes, except I don't, because athletics because starts at seventh grade.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I do have, I've tried that card where I've asked a lot of students, like, hey, do you want to play next year? And they're like, of course. And I'm like, well, I'm a coach, you know, I'll remember everything. And at first they're like, oh yes, sorry. And then 5 minutes later, you know, they're throwing a shoe across the classroom. So,
yeah. Well, I'm not going to give you any advice. I'm just wondering. I plan to ask you questions and hope we can, you know, recognize some interesting features of the public school system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and really when I think back on when I was teaching in public school, the athletes, especially the football athletes, were like well-behaved.
Yes.
I don't know that I ever had to hold a grade over any of them or anything. I don't have any memory of that. But I also thought about it in terms of their day is kind of like a little healthier, because like they have so much energy that they expend at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. I mean, it's like coming to class and sitting down. Like, who's got the energy to mess around and like?
Right.
So, but for sure, there's no doubt it's an incentive hanging over them, especially those who are starters and, you know, really proud of their athletic abilities.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. So what class is the class that's sort of easiest for you to teach in the social studies classes?
It wanes between my fifth and sixth period, mainly because the class size for both of them is so small.
Right.
But I feel like there's just not a lot of behavior issues. I feel like that's what I struggle with the most, behavior issues and classroom management. But in those two classes, I feel like the kids don't really, I mean, they don't act up. Sometimes they do, but it's like, I guess my relationship with them is just better.
Right.
And, you know, like I'd have someone sitting in the back of the class and they just yell something out and I would just glance at them and I'd be like, sorry. But you know, in my seventh period, if someone did that and I glance at them, that just encourages them to keep doing it. So
that's very confusing to keep track of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where does the glance work? Where does it not? Yeah.
But I definitely think class size plays a huge factor in that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I take it you probably have more space in the class to sort of, you know, does it feel as tight, maybe?
Yes. Well, I mean, it does still feel a little tight because...
Because all the desks are there, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, and in my fifth period, the way I have my desk set up is that it is perpendicular to the wall.
Yeah.
And then I have another smaller desk perpendicular to my desk. So it's like this big L shape. And in that fifth period class, I have students who take chairs and then place them all around my desk. So I have like five students sitting around me.
Oh, okay.
And that does tend to get a little tight.
But they're just like, that's just how they want to like interact with you. Is it?
And, yes. Yeah. Yes. It is nice when I think about it because yeah. I mean, it does. I do walk around a lot, but when I do eventually come back to my desk, they just want to chat, which is fine. I mean, right. As long as they're doing their work, but sometimes it does get a little too much and they lose focus and lose track of what they should be doing.
They're not pulling up around you and being like, tell me more about the Ottoman Empire.
No. 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 they're asking me like, so are you married? Why aren't you married? Can we put makeup on you? Stuff like that. So. The important questions for a sixth grader.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, and that's like so typical, right? It's for students to be like more interested in the person that the teacher is than what the teacher knows.
Yes.
I think you're describing something that any teacher and probably anyone who just remembers their student days. And I mean, I you know, it's worth like speculating on that. Like, I don't think that's, you said that they've asked you that question about being married like a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, almost every day.
Why do you think the answer is not sticking?
Or I don't know.
Or do they just think life moves that fast that one day you might be like, yep, I got married.
Yes. Yes. There are days where I'm not there, where, I don't know, I take a half day to go to the doctor or I have ed leave or whatever. And I come back and they're like, oh, were you gone because you were getting married? And I was like, no. No.
No. Are these all girls making these inquiries?
Mostly. There are a few boys, though. There are okay. A few boys who...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's something there. And, you, I mean, if you've heard this podcast before, you know, I might be, like, really interested in exploring, you know, that kind of feature of the students, so like that psychology mm-hmm. of young people right. where, you know... All of this learning that you want us to do is like way secondary to like, are mm-hmm. you an interest? Like, are you a person that like has interesting things to say about your own life?
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's, you know, honestly, that's learning. Like they're trying to learn. It's not trying to learn about social studies.
Yeah. And I feel like when I first started teaching, I was really, really focused on content, like getting them to understand whatever we were learning about.
Right.
And they just weren't, I mean, of course they weren't that interested. Only a few kids really were. But then I just realized like this is, I feel like my job as a sixth grade teacher is not to really have them to, or get them to really understand the content, but rather yeah. just to teach them like skills that they'll be able to use in future learning, like in high school. Where they're a little, you know, more, where they calm down a little and,
right,
you know, their brain grows. So like research skills and how to properly, you know, type in an inquiry into Google or Google Scholar or whatever. And
right.
All of those skills that will help them in the future rather than, you know, having them memorize all 54 countries of Africa.
Right. So. Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's... Yeah, for sure. So there's something to, you know, disciplining the habits, right?
Yes.
You know, even if nothing really sticks, it's like you get their mind used to certain things and maybe a few like specific skills are, you know, carried forward But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely sympathetic from the standpoint of like, it's sometimes tough to see exactly why do we teach all this content, right? It's mm-hmm. like, and I mean, and the situation that we are in, or that, you know, that you, when did you come to Westwood as a student, Sam?
My eighth grade year, that was 2015.
Okay, your 2014. Eighth grade year. Yeah, and so do you remember anything about yourself as a student, as an eighth grader?
I feel like I didn't do much. I know that. I feel like whatever, I mean, in the classroom, if we had to be quiet, I was quiet. If right. we had to do something, I did it.
Right.
I never put much of a fight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, I don't know. I was quiet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and what was the school like that you had come from before?
Well, I came from Frisco ISD.
Yeah.
And it was different. There are kids who I remember were against the idea of school. But I feel like I was the same way. I was just, I was quiet. I listened. I mean, I tried to listen sometimes. If it was boring, I would zone out. But I never, right. you know, blurted anything out. I did all the work.
Yeah.
So it's a lot different than, I feel, a lot different than the kids that I'm teaching today.
Yeah. You're saying that when you were in Frisco, you felt like there was some rebellion, but not nearly as much as what you're dealing with in Denton.
Yes.
Why did I go down memory lane there? I had a reason for it. Oh, do you know why? I mean, when y'all moved to Westwood, do you know why the family made that decision?
I'm pretty sure my mother was really interested in the idea of IB and getting college credit, or the possibility of getting college credit.
Okay.
So I think that was her driving factor, but I'm not sure. I actually never asked her about it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I do remember in seventh grade she was telling me about, you know, you can get a year off of college. And that was so cool. That would be so you'd get a better education.
Did you get that year?
Yeah, I did get that year, actually.
Yeah.
And I do feel like I did get a much better education, and I felt more prepared for you know, all the academic challenges that I faced in college.
And your biggest class at Westwood, numbers wise?
maybe six?
Yeah, mean, you were
our
in a
class
very
as a whole was
yeah,
yeah, it was eight people.
Class. Yeah.
Yeah, eight people. And yeah. then, you know, we split that up going to our own classes. So maybe, I think it was history. We had six people.
You're thinking, I think, of junior and senior years.
Yes, yes.
Right, right. Freshman and sophomore year, y'all were a little bigger.
Yeah.
But you were never, yeah, y'all were never very big class.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, one thing that we can sort of point to, like really easily, is that just class size. It's like you feel like it's the number one factor that is affecting your easiest class to manage versus harder classes to manage.
Yes.
I think you said something along those lines. It's the size helps.
Yeah. I do feel like a lot of it, I tend to draw on my own experiences a lot,
right.
even though I know I shouldn't, because myself as a student is completely different than the students that I have today. And I guess the educational experience that I prefer, not everyone else prefers, which I always, I fail to remember that a lot. So, but when the classes do get smaller, it becomes easier for me to relate and to draw my own experiences. So
right.
I feel more, I guess, safe and productive with smaller classes because I have experiences to draw on.
Right. And do you feel, and have you had days where like half the class is gone for like a field trip or something and you end up with like 12 or 13 kids in class?
No, not yet.
That never happens.
No.
So when you're saying smaller class, you're just talking low 20s.
Yeah, 22.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is like in my, like, certainly from public school, I'd be like, yeah, that's a small class. But, you know, after so many years at Westwood, I'm like, that's a big class. You know?
Right. You yeah.
know, we have, you know, I think our biggest, the most people we sit now in a class is 22, and that's because the teacher asked for a certain combination of ninth and 10th graders. And so we only do that like on request at Westwood. But for you, it's like, man, you're lucky if you end up with that small of a class.
And it's interesting because some of my colleagues have like Westwood size classes, like 8 kids.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I,
yeah, what are they teaching?
I know the science teacher next door, I think it's his second period class. I think it's just 9 boys. And then the math teacher, she has one class where it's 6 kids or 7. Wow.
Yeah.
So in a school with almost 800 students, I just find it amazing how that can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that is surprising. I mean, it's made me think about, so this isn't advice to you, this is advice to Texas. it's made me think a lot about, like, you know, the real solution, you know, this isn't the first time I've heard this, of course, and my own experiences inform this, but the real solution is one, much, much smaller class sizes. Like,
yes,
you know, at some point there was like a 25, like it was like state law or something, but they would just like carve out these exceptions all the time of like, no, but it really needs to be like enforced 15 or fewer. Like I strongly believe that you lose track of the child, of any individual child, once you have to manage a group dynamic that gets so big that you know, it gets unpredictable. It gets hard to combat certain behaviors.
Yeah.
Unless you're just like a total pro at doing that. In which case, if you're a total pro at doing that, you're probably not also endowed with the curriculum expertise or like personality where the kids want to be in your class.
Yeah.
Which it sounds like you've got a bit of that. You've got at least some students who like want to come to your class and they're excited to come. And I mean, is that the case?
Yeah, I feel like I connected with a lot of students on a personal level, but I am struggling to connect with them on an academic level. I think
I wouldn't worry about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's March, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we have 9 weeks left, and I'm counting down.
9 weeks left. And do you have a star test this year?
Yes, my subject isn't tested, thankfully.
Okay.
But yeah, the 6th graders have math and reading sometime in April.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And then I think also the other powerful thing that I think really changes like an educational dynamic is just an overall smaller community, which could happen in a large school of 800. You would just have to section them off into like, you know, communities where the kids can know everybody. But that's my advice for Texas. There's nothing you can do, Sam. Your job is to work on your skills at engaging with young people, which means probably constantly having them guessing at whether or not you're married or not.
Yeah.
So the seventh period class, the hardest to manage class.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, were they all boys, the ones that think they own, you know, run the school?
Mm-mm.
No?
There is girls one in boy in there. Yeah.
Oh, one boy. All girls. Okay.
Yeah.
So, ooh, interesting. Okay. I remember, I might have told this before on an episode, but I substituted, before I started full-time teaching, I substituted for a year. And I remember substituting for a 6th grade class. I think it was 6th or 7th, but it was definitely like, they were very small kids, but they're like, you know, they did not seem like the biggest kids in the school. They're girls. Mm-hmm. And they like the substitute lesson just like absolutely failed. And by the end of class, there's like 5 of them like at the front of the class, and they're singing this song about Sally Walker walking down the street, and like they're doing like this like it's almost like a patty cake game. I don't know what you call it, but you know, clapping each other's hands.
Yeah.
And they did it like, I swear to you, for like 30 minutes straight. And I could not like, I could not break into that as like the low credibility substitute teacher. And I remember just like, I still remember that. That song still gets stuck in my head. It wasn't like mean behavior, but it was definitely like, we're going to run the class that we want to run. And the class we want to run is doing this game. Is that, mm-hmm. is that the kind of resistance you get, or is it more hostile?
It's not hostile. It is, yeah. It's not like, I guess it is, they do want to run the class how they want to run it, because it's not, they don't do like dances or little patty cake games. They just, they sit down.
Yeah,
and then in their assigned seat, and then
huge win.
Get up. Yeah, but then they get up, and then they move to their friends, and then they start talking, and then they start moving around a bit more, and they pull some food out, and you know, 20 minutes goes by. You know, it's, I guess, let's just say it's like a project work day, and I walk by, and I'm like, why is your project blank? They're like, oh, I'll do it at home. And I'm like, well, like, I'm giving you time to do it now. And, yeah. You know, they're like, oh, I'll do it at home. And I just don't know how to get past that, because, like, they can do it at home. I'm not going to stop them.
Yeah. But
I don't know how to encourage them to do it now.
Yeah. And do they have credibility with actually getting their stuff done at home?
No. I mean... They do something. I'm not going to lie.
They'll do something. They'll
do something. And then they turn it in and I look at it and it's just, it's not of the best quality.
But it might be enough.
It might be enough.
Yeah, it might be enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound as nightmarish as what John, the guy we interviewed a couple episodes ago, was going through. So you must have like at least like a decent rapport with them, I take it.
Well, with that class, it's difficult. I don't really pay much attention to that group anymore.
Yeah,
we've kind of reached this mutual understanding where. They come into class, and if I let them work out in the hallway, they'll actually do something, and they won't, you know, disturb anybody else. So they come in, I give a little lecture or whatever we're doing that day, and then I can send them out in front of my door in the hallway.
Yeah.
And they sit on this little couch, and they whisper, and sometimes they do the work, sometimes they don't, but at least they're not really disturbing anybody else, and they're not running around.
Right.
So now that became the regular, and I can really focus on a bunch of other kids in that class, because it is my second biggest class, and there are a ton of kids in there who are struggling, and I'm always, you know, hovering around them and guiding them, so I can focus more on that than, you know, disciplining the other kids.
Right.
But at the beginning of the year, trying to do both of that was nearly impossible. I was sweating. Every single day.
Yeah. It's like a 1 hour class.
It felt like it, but no, they're all 40 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's fast too. I guess maybe mercifully in your situation, but I would hate a 40 minute class. And you know, when we do our condensed days, like, and we end up with like a 40 minute class, I'm like, oh, this is so worthless. But yeah, different mode, I guess. What's your are you allowed to send the kids to this couch in the hallway? Like, it that sounds like an unusual setup to have a couch in the hallway.
Yeah, well, it's not really a hallway. It's like this big open space. We call them pods. There's a sixth grade pod, seventh grade pod.
Oh, I gotcha.
There's no lockers anywhere in the school. Kids carry all their stuff with them all the time. And to fill up that space, we put a bunch of little seats, tables, and couches.
I gotcha.
So I used to let them go free. I'm like, hey, just go stay in the pod, but, you know, sit anywhere.
Right.
And then, of course, they would want to go further away from my classroom. And that became a problem. I would have teachers call me and be like, hey, your kids are running around. I'm like, okay.
Right.
Damn it. So I let them, like, I dragged a couch next to my room. I'm like, you cannot go past this couch. I'm like, I'm letting you go out here. I could say no, but I am. Right. So I highly suggest you stay on this couch. And they do. So we reached that understanding, and that's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you're you're making the decisions you have to make at that, you know, at that situation. Yeah. And sending kids out, like, if you can manage it, if you can, it seems like your only hope is to reduce that load. Especially if some kids have like real struggles with learning. I mean, they can totally, like one kid, right? One kid can take up all of your energy for a class. And
so, yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's tough. And you're always economizing too, because anytime I'd run into that and, you know, run into it at Westwood too, is like everybody might need like a little bit of help. But you know you got to work with this one kid or he's not going to get anything done. And then you feel it in your mind. You're like, okay, you just got to do what you can do at this point, kid, because I got 10 other, or in your case, 20 other students I really need to check on, or I'm afraid they'll stall out. And then you kind of know you're leaving a kid with just like, you know, in a position where he's not comfortable, doesn't know what to do. Does this sound familiar?
Yes. The entire time you were saying that, I was just thinking of this one student that I have.
Yeah.
Who is exactly like that. If I don't help him, then he's going to get nothing done.
Right.
And you know.
And what's his attitude towards learning? Is he like open to it and just can't do it? Or is he... doesn't want to do it and can't, is having struggles doing it?
He definitely can do it. I think
he definitely can do it. Okay.
He definitely can if he really puts his mind to it, but he's just so easily distracted.
Right. Right.
And he gets easily discouraged too. Like if we have a project where they have to create, I don't know, 10 slides or in a PowerPoint or whatever, he gets discouraged by that number. He's like, 10, I'm never going to get that done. That's too much.
Right.
I'm like, but like, it might seem like a lot, but you know, I'm also giving you 3 days to make 10 slides. I think, I don't think it's that bad.
Right.
But yeah, he's also he's very easily distracted. He likes to walk around and talk to his friends and cause a little bit of drama, ask me questions. Every single day he comes in and he yells Mr. Pillar, but he does it in a way where he sings it like Michael Jackson would sing Thriller. And he does that every day. And I've actually had to put a band to that because other kids were catching on, and I'd be walking down the hallway and I would hear one of my students in another class just singing that nonstop. And I'm like, yeah, that's okay. We can't be doing that anymore. But he definitely likes to do little things like that just to get attention. And
oh, man. Wow. How does the school or the district manage kids who need like a lot of just like academic support from learning differences? Like, I hear him, the ADD kid, which is kind of classic, like the guy who can manage it, but he can't focus it. But what about kids who like need like a lot more accommodations, like in terms of like they, you know, really struggle to understand like fundamental concepts, even when they are focused?
Right. So, in social studies, there's not really any specific classes just to help with social studies.
Yeah,
I have access to all of their 504s and IAPs, and I need to provide their accommodations on my own.
Right.
But for English and math, they do have intervention classes where they go to a specific classroom, and you know, there's a teacher who is trained specifically for that.
Right.
And they get all their accommodations and more within there. But it's challenging.
Yeah.
To do that on my own, there is. A few, I guess, co-teachers that specialize in special education who come visit classrooms, but none of them come to mind. I don't think social studies is one that gets a co-teacher like that.
Yeah, no star test at the end of the year, I guess.
right. So it's tough. I do my best. And, you know, it's also difficult to get kids the help they need if there is a student who I see is struggling and other teachers see them as struggling, and we look and they don't have any paperwork.
Right.
To kind of get that going, to get the help that they need is also tough. Our admin team this year is both assistant principals, it's their first year, so they're also pretty they're also struggling a little bit. And our principal, she has a lot of family stuff going on, so she's not there all the time. So really, so getting that paperwork going and getting the students the help they need is a lengthy process that doesn't always happen.
Yeah, man, that's tough. So how much time are you spending like outside of the working day on things like grading, working on IEPs, making? I remember we used to have to make like all sorts of like tests, like changes in our tests and our assignments. Like, does that take up a lot of your day outside of working hours?
No, not too bad. I'm very adamant about not working outside of working hours. I feel like it would have been different if I wasn't coaching. But since I am coaching, you know, during football season, I would wake up at 4:45 or 5 in the morning, and then I would be going to bed at 9. But the thing is, I would get home at like 7 o'clock. So I only have like 2 hours to myself, and yeah. I needed those 2 hours to just unwind. It got a lot easier during basketball season, and it got much easier during track.
Right.
But so because I started with football, yeah, and I had to, you know, during my two periods where we would use for planning and meeting, I got very, very good about getting everything done in those two periods. And I also have a really, really great social studies partner who's been teaching for 20 plus years, and he already has a lot of pre-made lessons and activities that he just sends to me.
Oh, nice, yeah.
So a lot of that is easy. But if I wasn't coaching, I think I would definitely use time at home to plan more engaging and better lessons for sure.
Yeah, it's nice to have that kind of support, but it does take out the creativity from teaching a lot of times.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that football season kind of disciplined you in a way.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah, let's go into that a little bit. Like, is that kind of day is like you're waking up early? What time are the kids getting to football practice in the morning?
What time did it start? I think football practice started at 6:30.
Yeah,
but I had to be there at the latest 6 because I was in charge of field setup.
Yeah,
and it's also about a 30-minute drive. So,
yeah. And so field set up at 6, kids are coming in at 6:30. And then what time is first period over?
9.
Wow. So you're getting two and a half hours. I mean, I guess they're having to shower and stuff at the end of that, but.
Well, not really. We only gave them 5 minutes to do that. Yeah.
From one sense, that'll keep the hijinks at bay when you got a 5 minute shower and dress time, but
right,
that hardly seems like enough time.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
So, and then 8th period, what time does that start? What time does that start?
2:50.
And then that's the beginning of your football practice in the afternoon, correct?
Yes.
And then
it was 5:15 or 5:30.
Okay. So yeah, so they're trying to get a solid 2.5 hours in at the beginning and at the end of the day.
Right.
And these kids are expending a lot of energy, I take it, during practice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But it was... Yeah, the days were rough because, well, our game days were Monday and Tuesday. Monday, 7th grade played, and Tuesday, 8th grade played. So those were long days. I would get home around 10 or 11.
Really?
Yeah, and we would have practice the next day.
Right, just...
And then we also had to work a lot for the high school that our middle school feeds into.
Right.
Often, Thursday nights, me and a few other coaches would have to drive somewhere ridiculously far to watch a high school football game and take notes to kind of give our high school like a heads up of what they're going against. And then with that, that would either be on Thursday or Friday.
They just and, give, God.
Yeah. And if on Thursday, if we had to go watch another team play on Thursday, then the following Friday, we would go to that our high school and watch them play.
And watch, yeah, and see how they managed with the notes.
Yeah. not even. The notes we took like 2 weeks in advance. We just were there for moral support, I guess. Okay. Yeah, we were just standing on the sidelines, just waiting, just watching.
Required moral support.
Yes. A few other coaches had actual jobs, like they would have to film and do all that. But I'm the new guy. I just had to stand there.
Well, yeah, well, a lot of times a new guy gets the worst jobs, but I guess you're too new. You're too new.
Yeah, and it sucks. I mean, if I'm honest, I didn't want to coach at all, ever. I just, I took it because it was, you know, towards the end of June, and I didn't have a job, and I'm like, and I want to teach social studies, but I can't find anything else by itself. And I'm like, this is the only offer I have, so I'll take it. And it's a much more difficult job to do when you're not really passionate about it. Where being at these high school games just feels like a waste of time rather than something exciting and something you can learn from.
Right, so right.
I was always upset.
Yeah, it's not like you're driving out to watch some sport that you ever really cared about, I guess. I mean, I don't remember you ever saying anything about football.
No.
And certainly we didn't have a team. And yeah. I don't think you cared about that. So you became a coach to get the job.
Yes.
Yeah. And then back to like a regular day, which sounds like there's very few regular practice days. Are you doing field breakdown as well after practice?
Like kind of. I was in charge of that, but I had a lot of athletes come and help me, like bring stuff in. So it
was a little easier at the end of the day.
Yeah, yes, it was quicker.
Why they got to take everything down every day and then put it up every morning?
I'm not sure. I don't know. We have this really, really big shed where we keep everything, and we had to take everything out from it in the morning and then put it back in.
You got to make sure you use that shed.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I didn't mind because the field setup was calm. It was early and it was still, you know, during September. It's hot during the day, but it was still kind of not as hot in the mornings. And it was kind of peaceful. And there was also this really big kind of like a little, what's the name? Like a little buggy.
Yeah. With a
little,
like a
truck
mule
bed
or
in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fun to drive around. So
yeah.
I found some enjoyment in that. It's like the calm before the storm.
I feel like so many times talking to you, I feel like the smallest things just make you happy. Like oh, I had 31 kids and it went down to 30 and it was like, praise God.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like just the smallest victories are so appreciated in your situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I just need to have a, it's so easy to, I don't know, become disappointed in this job or, you know, lose faith. So I guess I just need to be excited about the smallest things just to have a better, you know, a more positive mental outlook, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's good. That's for sure. The seems like the way to be in a situation that you can't change.
Right.
And you definitely, I mean, I shouldn't say you definitely, but I definitely couldn't figure out how to change anything in the public school system as much as I wanted to. Oh, but you did mention to me earlier, but before we start recording, that at some point your phone asked you if you wanted to change your home address.
That's spending so much time there that it just Apple Maps was like, hey, do you live here? Gave me my school's address, and I remember that I was in my car I just got into my car to go to work, and I saw that notification, and like a part of me just broke inside a little bit.
Oh man!
But it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you managed. And then basketball season, a little bit less of a day, but still long.
Yeah, they put me with the seventh graders, and they split it up so that only some coaches did seventh grade while the others did eighth grade. So I just had morning practices every day, and then we had a game on Thursday.
Yeah.
And I did have more nights during the week that opened up, but with basketball, instead of working for the high school on Thursday or Friday, there would be a few instances where we would have to go to the high school on a Saturday for like a tournament or something. And it would be an all-day thing. It would be from like 9 to 9.
Great.
Yes. Yeah.
So there you go, Saturday.
Yeah, but that happened, I think, 4 or 5 times during basketball season. So it wasn't too bad. But
yeah,
it still wasn't fun. I mean, I'd enjoy to have a Saturday to myself. But comparing it to football season, it was a lot less.
Right. All right. So, Sam, I take it from all of these responsibilities and everything that you're probably just like an incredibly wealthy man by now. Yeah.
Wealthy in experience.
Wealthy in experience. There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. So what are you looking forward to in terms of teaching and in terms of your career? What are you thinking with this, this wealth of experience that you got?
Well, looking super far out, I'm still not really sure where I want to end up. I don't know if I want to stay in education for the rest of my life, but I do want to, thinking short term, I do want to explore other possibilities. I do want to teach high school.
Right.
I want to go somewhere where maybe I feel like a better sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Because where I work now, I mean, it's just too much is happening for me to really feel like I'm part of something positive. But yeah, I don't know if I want to teach social studies anymore. I'm not fully certified yet either. I'm still on an intern certificate.
Yeah.
Because of my alt cert. But I finished all the testing and everything, and all that's left is for me to finish out the school year. And once that's done, then they'll issue me my license. But I am thinking of maybe going back and getting taking the Tech Apps test or a CTE test, maybe teaching broadcast or some schools I've seen offer like media studies.
Right.
So I think that would interest me a lot more. So I'm starting to look at options for that. But long term, maybe this could lead me into higher ed. Maybe I do eventually want to go back and get my master's, so maybe go back. Well, first I need to figure out what I want to study. I mean, there's so many things that I do want to study, it's kind of hard to just pick one. Sure, but once I pick one, maybe really delve into that and stay at the university or work for another university and do research or be a professor or something like that. But right now I'm just trying to figure out the year. Just make it through the next 9 weeks. That's the first thing that I need to do.
Right. And then does coaching, like I know the way they're doing coaching there is not attractive, but did any aspect of the coaching appeal to you now that you had that experience?
No. Not at all. I do not want to do it again. Never again.
This is really clear to you that you're not meant to be a coach.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's good to know. All right. Well, is there anything else that you want to share while you have the chance to broadcast to dozens of people?
No, not that I want to share, but I was curious to ask you when we were talking about how Texas itself has to change in order to improve education. I feel like when talking to a majority of other teachers, they all agree that something has to change. And I'm just curious on your thoughts on what do you think, what would it take for things to change?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that it takes is a really, I think, fed up population. Because we have to, I mean, I don't feel like your situation is like an emergency, but it's clearly falling, like it's clearly coming up short of what we're, you know, hoping for students to experience. And it's not because of you as a teacher. You know, so much of how Texas has gone, and many other states, I'm sure, has been like, oh, we need to train the teachers better. We need the classroom management, the behavioral problems. They just need to know how to manage those things. And it's like, there's this part of it that I think, like, philosophically we don't understand is that when you start training someone to handle some things, you're training out of them ways that they might really do great rapport building with students. Or, you know, if you have to behave a certain way to manage behaviors, then you can't behave other ways that might otherwise make you a really good teacher. So I think, like, we're not, like, dealing with that, and we're also always trying to get by on the cheap. I mean,
right.
You know, it's not, you don't have to pay, you'll never have to pay teachers a lot of money, because it's just sort of in them to help out young people and to be part of that, you know, raising that generation. But when you just take advantage of that, that's what I call exploitation, right? When you're just like, yes. Oh, well, we really don't have to pay you a lot because you just care so much. We'll just, like, count on you caring a lot, and then you can get by on your, you know, your like minimum wage plus a little bit. Yeah. So what would it take? It's the people who put the representatives in Austin and who, you know, vote for our leaders of the state. We got to decide we want to put real money into this and put real thought into how to change it. And I mean, a lot of it's would be tough in Texas, because I think our population in Texas, I think we're almost like, it's almost ruined, because football and sports is so important. And it doesn't seem like anyone can even think about a way to continue to have excellent football teams, which we produce in Texas, like by the boatload, because we have these gigantic schools. I mean, you're in sixth through eighth grade with 800 students, and they're feeding into a high school with how many students?
I don't know, but it's 6A.
Yeah, 6A, right? So thousands of students. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to have a football team that, even if they're the worst in 6A, they're going to be one of the best football teams that's ever existed in Texas, because their population is so enormous that they're pulling from.
Right.
You know, it's just like all of these 6A teams would have whooped any, like, team in the 80s or 90s. I'm, like, positive about that. I mean, like, I'm sure there's some way we could statistically analyze it, but it just, you know, it's just at some point it's a matter of, like, how large of a population can you pull, you know, elite athletes from? And so I don't know. I don't think we're anywhere close to figuring this out, because our population cares too much about football. And, like, it's not a sport that's going to ever align with teaching kids academic subjects. Like, it only will align from the standpoint, let me say it this way, it's a sport that a lot of kids care about and a lot of the population care about, but the level of performance that we have demanded from football is stupid.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say. Just, like, have a small, like, if you have to line up football with school, which I'm not sure you do, have a small school with a small football team that's a little more scrappy, you know, and not pre-professional. So it would take, a real alignment of our interests across, like, not just across, you know, education, but across, like, everything we expect in the world.
Yeah.
And I think Americans in general are just expecting, you know, really good entertainment from their sports. And so this the schools are really the victim of, like, I don't know, Sam. Like, you said that, and I started saying, like, yeah, maybe there's some hope. And then the more I talked about it, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. Like, this is why people go towards, like, just giving up on democracy, is because you're like, how are we ever going to convince people that?
Yeah.
So I think maybe sports needs to be decoupled from school. I think that might be an important step. And then you wouldn't have to have a gigantic school, you know, and you could sort of judge sports, you know, separately from academics. And I don't think it would matter much in terms of incentivizing students to behave who are in sports, because I really do think a big part of their good behavior comes from the fact that they have an appropriate amount of energy expended. I think that's maybe where I would go, and then really force the small class sizes, like, absolutely,
right.
Like, mandate it, no exceptions. And that's hard, because you're not going to have enough teachers, and so you're going to actually have to make the profession attractive so that people who did it, but then they didn't stay in it because it was just, like, a little bit too hard to make ends meet, and who were, like, pretty clever and could... There's a lot of, like, people I've talked to who've started teaching who are, like, pretty clever, and they saw pretty quickly they could do other stuff in the world, and so they did.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's just easier. Like, it's just easier to live. We gotta make it a more attractive profession from that standpoint, and you can't.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the sense of, like, you have to help the next generation, then you're not gonna stick with teaching. Like, there's no reason to. And I don't know. I never left it, so I guess I'm not too clever. But I kind of see it as, like, a duty. In some ways, like, an inescapable duty to participate in raising the next generation.
Yeah.
That's another thing. Now you've got me on a soapbox, Sam. you finish this episode with the soapbox of, like, yeah, I don't think people should be allowed to opt out of being a part of raising the next generation. Like, I don't think you should be able to be like, oh, I'm going to be like a finance dude, and I'm just not going to care, like, outsource it to the schools. Like, I mean, that's garbage, man. That's, like, there's no way to run a society. Everyone needs to be involved in the next generation's, like, well-being. So I'm going to stop now.
Okay.
do you have any other questions, or were you on a 10-minute answer ramble?
No, that was good.
All right. Well, Sam, I really appreciate you sharing all of this, and I wish you luck in your 9 weeks remaining this school year.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so thank you, of course, to our listeners. And we will see you next time. Goodbye.